I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. Me.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered. For just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm JB Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Tracy B. Wilson.
And I'm Holly Fry. Welcome to the podcast.
So in our previous episode, we talked about the Great Emu War, and something came up in that episode, which comes up pretty often if you are reading about Australia, particularly if you are reading about the state of Western Australia. It's the rabbit-proof fence.
Which I had known nothing about before we got into that one.
No, I feel like it keeps coming up when I'm reading things about Australia. There's also a film I have seen called Rabbit-Proof Fence. That came out in 2002. It's about some young girls who were part of the stolen generation of the 30s who follow the rabbit-proof fence home to get back to where they came from in Jigalong. It's based on the book Followed the Rabbit-Proof Fence, and the score in the film is by Peter Gabriel. I like it quite a lot.
I have not seen the film, but I will make a point to you.
Yes, it is it's a little slight digression, but every time this rabbit-proof fence comes up, I go, okay, obviously, there are lots of rabbits in Australia. Somebody put up a big fence. What's really going on with this fence? And so that's what we're going to talk about in this episode.
Yeah. And first we have to kind of start with how rabbits got introduced.
Right.
To the environment. And the earliest European settlers to Australia, as most people know, were convicts and their keepers. But by the mid-1800s, more affluent English people were starting to settle there as well.
A lot of them brought animals and plants from home with them to try to make Australia feel more like England. These people were known as acclimatizers. There were acclimatization societies, including the Victorian Acclimatization Society, which was founded in 1861 by Edward Wilson. So really what they were after was to try to make Australia, which does not feel like England in most places, feel more like England.
Yeah. It was their own weird version of terraforming.
Right.
To try to turn it somehow into an English countryside.
In a lot of ways, this was deeply unsuccessful and damaging, with this being one example. Enter Thomas Austin. He was born in Somerset, England, and his uncle James was a convict settler who had been sent to Hobart Town, Tasmania. James Austin died before Thomas and his family got to Tasmania in 1831, but they all got money in his will.
And many of the family actually returned to England, but Thomas and his brother decided, whose name was James, decided that they were going to stay down under and make a go of it. In 1837, Thomas and James moved to what would later become Victoria. Thomas established the estate of Barwon Park, which was a 42-room mansion eventually. He didn't build that right off the bat, but eventually there was a 42-room mansion there. It was surrounded by 29,000 acres of stocked grounds. He farmed sheep and raised and trained horses, among other things, on all of this land. And he also really wanted some rabbits.
And he had married Elizabeth Phillips Harding in Melbourne on August 14th of 1845. And together they had 11 children, 8 of whom survived to adulthood. And he also is one of the people who introduced sparrows to Australia, which also later became pests.
Yes. So here we have Thomas, his family, his wife, living on this estate together, really wanting to introduce rabbits. There was a demand. They weren't the only people who were of this mindset. There was a demand for rabbits in Australia. Early acclimatizers had brought domesticated rabbits, which did okay when people were looking after them. But if they managed to escape into the Australian wilderness, they usually did not manage to survive really well. Sometimes they would manage to establish a little colony, get kind of a foothold, but they didn't run rampant anywhere. They did a little better in Tasmania and some of the other smaller islands around the main Australian continent. But in general, domesticated rabbits were not doing so well.
No. And Thomas actually asked his nephew, William Mack, to bring him some wild rabbits in an effort to kind of bolster the population. And William brought 24 rabbits on the Clipper Lightning in December of 1859. 18 of those rabbits were feral, and they had just been trapped and held in an enclosed warren. They weren't domesticated. They weren't accustomed to interacting with humans at all.
Thomas, in an act he became quite notorious for doing, set 13 of the rabbits free. He kept 11 of them in fenced enclosures on his property, and they multiplied, as rabbits do. 3 years later, a flood destroyed part of his fence, and so some of those now huge population of rabbits escaped into the Australian territory.
Which caused an explosion of rabbit population.
Yes. By 1867, rabbits were really everywhere, and Thomas would have rabbit hunting parties at his estate. Prince Alfred, the Duke of Edinburgh, went on a hunting day in Barwon Park that year, and he shot 416 rabbits in 3.5 hours. He reportedly had to have attendants on hand to hand him new guns when the one he was using got too hot because he was shooting too fast for his guns to cool down between shots.
By 1869, the infestation of rabbits was causing property values in some areas to plummet. And the rabbits themselves, we should point out, were not the only ones to blame. Farmers were actually clearing woodland and making it a much more hospitable environment for the rabbits to thrive in.
Their introduction was in Victoria on the coast in the far southeast of Australia, and they spread north and west from there. By the 1880s, the government had started offering bounties on dead rabbits because there were so many of them. And by 1900, rabbits were in all or part of every Australian state. They were the biggest nuisance outside of the tropical areas. And so this was less than 40 years after they were introduced to Australia. They were in every state of Australia. It's a big continent.
It is. That's a pretty explosive population growth for any animal. In less than 4 decades to completely engulf a continent is pretty amazing.
Right. The rabbits became prey for other introduced species like wild cats, wild dogs, foxes, and dingoes. All of these except for dingoes were introduced after the landing of the First Fleet, which was the 11 ships that reached Australia from Great Britain in 1788. A lot of people think of dingoes as being native to Australia, but they really arrived to Australia when humans did about 3,000 or 4,000 years ago. So whether to call dingoes native is a subject of debate.
Yeah. And in addition to the basic nuisance factor that was going on and the fact that the rabbits were crowding out native species, they could also completely strip an area of anything they would eat. That includes food crops that were intended for people, as well as crops that were intended to support the raising of other animals. So this also led not only to things going without food, but also really bad erosion issues.
Right. You can find pictures sometimes of really well-maintained rabbit fences. And on one side of the fence will be completely stripped of all vegetation. And on the other side, there will be healthy grass growing.
So it's a dramatic difference of rabbits versus no rabbits.
They're extremely thorough in finding every consumable element in an environment.
Yes.
And then the great idea happened to build a fence to help with this problem.
Yeah. By the 1880s, people were building fences on their own in an attempt to keep rabbits out of their property. Often this was not effective at all because there were already rabbits on both sides of the fence. And also rabbits like to burrow under things. And so even if there had not been rabbits on both sides of the fence, the rabbits would just dig a hole underneath and come up on the other side.
So eventually construction was begun on what became the state barrier fence. And that happened from 1901 to 1907. And this followed a 5-month investigation by Arthur Mason, which started in 1896, and a royal commission in 1901. So private contractors did the work on the state barrier fence and then handed it over to the Public Works Department in 1904.
The fence itself, when it was originally being built, was made of wooden posts, wire, and wire netting, with gates every 34 kilometers, which is about 20 miles, and traps to try to catch rabbits that did manage to burrow under it. Usually the crews were cutting timber from the surrounding trees to make the posts, and if there weren't any trees, they would use metal posts instead. The netting for the fence also extends underground to try to prevent burrowing from underneath it.
Yeah.
And they would coat the bottom part of the fence in the hope of keeping it from rusting out.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you use paper, you're a human. But if you choose paper, you're a papertarian, someone who lives a paper-based lifestyle because it has a positive impact on the planet. And also because it's the easiest choice you'll make all day, seriously. It's as easy as reaching for boxed instead of bottled water. It's as easy as opting for beauty products that come in paper packaging. It's as easy as grabbing eggs in a cardboard container. And that's all in one trip to the grocery store, which, if everyone's being honest, you were planning to go to anyway. But paper isn't just an easy choice. Papertarians know that it's the smart choice, too. Because paper comes from trees, a renewable and sustainably managed resource, and paper products are designed to be recycled. In fact, when you choose products that come in paper-based packaging, those fibers can go on to be recycled up to 7 times. So why wouldn't you go papertarian? Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry,
Every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
So the number one fence runs from north to south, roughly through the middle of Western Australia. The number three fence stretches out east to west about midway down the number one fence. And the number two fence stretches north to south, dividing the zone created by the number one and number three fences roughly in half.
Yes. So basically there's a fence running the entire height of Australia from north to south all the way down. The reason that there are three of them is because as they were building, rabbits kept getting ahead of the fence. And so they were sort of further subdividing to try to keep the rabbits contained. What they wound up with was 3,256 kilometers, which is 2,023 miles of fence, which cost more than £300,000 at the time. Like we said in the last episode, Australia was not on the dollar for money at the time. So it's a little hard to compare what that would amount to in today's money.
And the fences fell under the jurisdiction of, I love this title, the first chief inspector of rabbits, whose name was Alexander Crawford. At their completion in 1907, he took over as chief inspector of rabbits, which is just the best thing to put on
the best
a business
title.
Card of all time.
Right. Just building the fence was not enough. They were going to then have to inspect the fence constantly to make sure that it didn't get damaged or burrowed under. People would travel the length of the fence using bicycles, horses, and camels to look for breaches. And there were huts set up periodically along the way that people could stay in while they were doing this inspection. Once motor vehicles became more common, people did start using them to inspect the fence. But really, in the beginning, it was bicycles, horses, camels, or on foot, which is a lot of fence to try to inspect.
It is. And there were not always areas that motor vehicles could even reach. So they had to retain some of those slower methods for the those areas that just couldn't be arrived at by car.
Right.
And there were other anti-rabbit fences constructed elsewhere in Australia. These three were not the only ones.
No, there's the dog fence, which goes, it's very meandering, but it's in a roughly east-west direction through South Australia, then along the South Australia, Queensland, New South Wales border, through Queensland and almost to the coast. It keeps dingoes on one side of the fence and was put up when dingo attacks were happening so frequently that it had become basically impossible to raise sheep. Also, in addition to there being multiple other sort of vermin excluding fences is the broad category they fall into. The state barrier fence also deters other animals than rabbits, such as emus, as we talked about in the previous episode.
Now, the thing is that all of these fences remain a little controversial, as to whether or not they really work, whether their impact on the biodiversity of the areas outweighs, the benefit of containing vermin. And so it's while they are doing their jobs in many cases, some people question their validity as a maintained entity. Like, are we wasting our time and money on this?
Right.
But the Department of Agriculture and Food in 2001 decided that the fence would now be maintained by the Department of Agriculture, the Agriculture Protection Board, the State Barrier Fence Advisory Committee, local shires, and stakeholders. So roughly every year, the fence has about 30 to 35 kilometers that need replacing. And new sections have steel posts and more modern prefabricated netting.
Right. So it's a fence that's still there, still being maintained, still attempting to do the job of keeping rabbits on one side and not on the other side, or at least fewer rabbits on one side than on the other side. And rabbits are still a nuisance. Right now, there's a similarly controversial attempt to introduce diseases into rabbit populations to try to curb their spread. And there are lots of layers of the reasons why that can be problematic or upsetting to some people. But that is one of the things that's being done in an attempt to keep the rabbit population from completely overrunning the rest of Australia.
So one important legacy to look at is that of the man who brought rabbits to Australia,
Thomas really started to take the blame for the rabbit infestation pretty early on. He was probably not the only person to bring rabbits that eventually did multiply. That's sort of unlikely. But he was really boastful about what he was doing. He frequently gave breeding pairs to people as gifts. So while it's probably not true that the entire population of rabbits in Australia now is the fault of this one guy, he's
kind of taking the hit.
He bragged about his rabbits a lot, and he made a name for himself that way. He died on December 15th, 1871, which was 6 months after their mansion was finished. His widow eventually used her money to open a hospital for what they called incurables in 1882, and she opened a children's ward in 1898. So they went on to have kind of a legacy in Australia, apart from bringing rabbits to destroy us all.
The negative rabbit image is not the only thing that his family left behind, which is good.
Yeah. And it's also good to recognize that while he's getting all the flack, probably there were many other rabbit people who just did not make quite the name for themselves that he did.
Yeah, he was not the only person that wanted to turn Australia into England.
No.
So it's very likely that plenty of other people were bringing in rabbits as well as other species.
Right. And that's a thing that you'll see in other English colonies, an attempt to make other places that are absolutely not England
more like England.
It's sort of a colonial tradition and is absolutely problematic, but is a thing that definitely contributed in a long-lasting way to a lot of parts of the world.
Yes.
For good or for ill. And that's the story of the rabbit fence.
Now we know.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you use paper, you're a human. But if you choose paper, you're a papertarian, someone who lives a paper-based lifestyle because it has a positive impact on the planet. And also because it's the easiest choice you'll make all day, seriously. It's as easy as reaching for boxed instead of bottled water. It's as easy as opting for beauty products that come in paper packaging. It's as easy as grabbing eggs in a cardboard container. And that's all in one trip to the grocery store, which, if everyone's being honest, you were planning to go to anyway. But paper isn't just an easy choice. Papertarians know that it's the smart choice, too. Because paper comes from trees, a renewable and sustainably managed resource, and paper products are designed to be recycled. In fact, when you choose products that come in paper-based packaging, those fibers can go on to be recycled up to 7 times. So why wouldn't you go Papertarian? Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
You also have some listener mail for
us? I do. Today's listener mail is a listener postcard. It shows on the front a very lovely picture of a coastline, like a hilly coastline with a village at the bottom of it. It is the village of Actowan, which is a native Alaskan village in the Aleutian Islands. Less than 100 people live there, written on the postcard. Less than 100 people live there, along with a fish processing plant. Sarah, who wrote this to us, says, I travel to remote Alaskan villages such as Actowan by float plane, small planes, and boats to do eye exams. I work in the public health service, so it keeps us very busy traveling to the villages with all of the eye equipment, 300 pounds, and doing eye exams. I always bring you with me to put on speaker during my hikes to keep the bears away. That's the best use of our podcast.
You've heard, I think.
I love hearing about people who are using the podcast to sort of do tasks that they don't like to do, but scaring bears away is a new and awesome one.
That's spectacular.
So to return to Sarah's postcard, thanks for keeping me entertained and safe. More Native American and Alaskan stories would be great. Sarah, thank you so much, Sarah, for this postcard. I love hearing about your hiking and your bears and your eye exams.
Stay safe.
Yes, please do. If you would like to write to us, you may at historypodcast@discovery.com. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/historyclassstuff and on Twitter at Missed in History. We've just started up a Tumblr, which is missedinhistory.tumblr.com, and we're on Pinterest. It's everywhere. If you would like to learn more about what we have talked about today, go to our website and type in the word invasive species in the search bar, and you will find 5 invasive species that might conquer the world. Spoiler, one of them is rabbits. You can learn about all that and a whole lot more at our website, which is howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
This episode of Stuff You Missed in History Class is brought to you by Jack Threads.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah! And some waves, so we could go surfing.
Oh,
Ah, love that!
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in!
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it!
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.